Srila Prabhupada ki, Bhakti Vedanta ki, Prantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Giridas Maharaj ki, Go Premanande. Yeah, must be. Has anyone got a watch? Like a digital watch I can use? I think I left mine in the car. I just need to see what the time is. Yeah. The second watch. Okay. Is that accurate?
Yeah, it's a digital.
No,
sure.
What time's your phone, sir? What time's the same? Okay. Oh, it's here, is it? How do I? Yeah, it's a little bit fast. Okay. Keep an eye out there. Okay. So tonight, we will finish chapter 49. What is chapter 49 called? Akrura? Yeah. So this chapter has a lot of philosophical points, a lot of philosophical lessons for us to learn. Very powerful chapter, very instructive chapter. So we'll continue from verse number 16. Okay. The ardent affection. You're late, manager. Disturbs the whole class.
Sorry.
Okay. The ardent affection King Dhritarashtra felt for his sons had made him act unjustly toward the Pandavas. Just before leaving, Akrura approached the king, who was seated among his friends and supporters, and related to him the message that his relatives, Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram, had sent out of friendship. So, Prabhupada does not give a purport, but Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments that The nature of the conditioned soul, he always thinks in terms of aham mameti. Aham mameti means
I and mine.
That is coming from false ego. Because we have false ego, we always think in terms of ourselves, and those things extended to ourselves. That's natural in the material. Even Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that. One of his writings, he says that's natural. When you're born in this world, you have a natural, like I'm Bengali or I'm South India or like that. It's natural to have like that. But we should not let it override or dominate our consciousness. Our real ego, aham, means I am. Aham means I am Krishna's servant. That's real ego. In the material world, we have a different concept. And then mameti. Mameti means this is mine. Real ego means Krishna is mine. I am Krishna's servant. Krishna is my master. He is my lord. He is my master. And when we become more advanced and more purified, then we think he is my friend, he is my parent, he is my son, he is my lover. That's advanced consciousness. But in the beginning, at least we think he is my lord and master. Now, the nature of a devotee, devotees are always looking to establish good will and good relationships with other devotees, and with everyone actually. That's the nature of a devotee. Rupa Goswami says in the Mathura Mandala Mahatmya, he tells the story actually about himself, that you know the story where he's in meditation and then one devotee comes to visit him and then, you know, he's laughing because he's meditating on the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. And then while laughing, that devotee takes a little bit of offense and then his meditation breaks. And that's Rupa Goswami, the most advanced devotee. Even his meditation broke when a little bit of offense was. If someone feels ill towards us. He says at the end of that pastime, he tells that pastime, he says at the end, be very careful you do not create ill feelings in the hearts of other Vaishnavas. You have to be very careful. Always conscious. We do not make ill feelings. Sometimes we do it accidentally. You know, we say things to each other and like that. But if we see that we do it, we must rectify it very quickly. You know, you go and say, oh, Prabhu, I'm sorry, offer obeisances and please forgive me, offer some service to that lady. Okay, so we have to be very careful. So the nature of the devotee, he wants peace and harmony. With other devotees, especially, but with everyone. So Akrura is coming to Dhritarashtra. They're actually related. These are cousins. The Yadus, the Kauravas, they're cousins. So he's coming there because he wants to have a friendly relationship. But the non-devotee mentality, the materialistic mentality, materialistic consciousness, is that we can't have friendship. That's material consciousness. When there's friction between devotees, that's material consciousness, actually. Prabhupada says, even amongst liberated souls, there is disagreement. You know, Prabhupada and Prabhupada's godbrothers, they may not see eye to eye. In the spiritual world, one camp may see one way, but there's always harmony. Even though they may have different opinions and see things differently, but the way they deal with each other is very respectful. You know, it never turns into animosity or ill feelings or like that. You know, but they may have different opinions. That's okay. But very respectfully, we share those opinions. So that is the nature of a devotee. He's like that. Whereas material consciousness means friction is there. You know, when someone's in material consciousness, they'll create friction with someone else. And that's not devotional consciousness, actually. You know, even like, you know, some devotees we don't get along with. That's natural because we're all very different according to the modes of nature. So some people like, they don't gel with me. I can't relate to them. And some people, they just can't relate to me. You know, they just think Kesar is, you know, a little strange or he's different or, you know, the way he is, I don't relate to it. So that's okay. So those kind of devotees, when we're like that, when we feel like that or they feel like that towards us, then we just be respectful and just keep a distance. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But we should never create ill feelings in the heart of anyone. So you see here that Akrura, he just wants peace. That's this is what all of, and the whole Mahabharata, we know the story that the Pandavas came, you know, and Prabhupada actually points out, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur points out in this section, the kingdom actually belongs to Yudhishthira. It was his father's kingdom. The only reason Dhritarashtra took it over as the younger brother of Pandu was because, or is he the elder brother?
Yeah, he's the elder brother, but because he was blind.
Yeah, he's blind. Yeah, so Pandu took over. So rightfully it belongs to Yudhishthira.
And anyway, Yudhishthira is the eldest.
Yeah, Yudhishthira
is. That's why it belongs to him. Amongst the Kauravas and Pandavas, Yudhishthira
yeah.
is the eldest.
Yeah.
That's why Gandhari struck her wound when she came to Kunti, otherwise, before her, so out of envy, she struck her wound.
Yeah. Yeah, so technically it's his kingdom. But Dhritarashtra, he has taken the kingdom because they were young, so I said, okay, I'll rule. When they get old enough, then give it back. Right? But the nature of materialistic consciousness is that we create animosity and friction. And then finally the Pandavas came. They said, just give us 5 villages. No problem, we don't have to have everything. Right? At first they said, let's just cut the whole thing in half. And they did cut it in half at one point. Indraprastha was created. So they said, cut it in half, right? And then later on they said, just give us 5 villages if that's too much for you. And then they said, we won't give you enough land to drive a pin into. Now, this is materialistic consciousness. So devotees, we shouldn't be like that with other devotees. Always be careful the way we deal with each other. You know, sometimes we have differences, that's okay. Sometimes we don't get along, that's okay. So just be very careful how we deal with each other. That's the main point. So Akrura is teaching us Vaishnava etiquette. Dhritarashtra is teaching us materialistic consciousness. Any points?
Thank you.
Yep.
You know how you said sometimes it's okay if you don't get along?
Yep.
Isn't it like a type of conditioning then?
Type of what?
Isn't it like kind of conditioning then? Because
that we don't get along? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's because of the modes of nature. Because we're all in different modes in this material world.
Then how can we go back if we have that kind of conditioning of this?
No, but it means when you become purified, you feel affection towards every living entity. But maybe you don't get along, right? But you just feel, you know, Prabhu, I just want you to go back to the spiritual world. You know, when we talk, you know, we don't kind of gel. It doesn't really, don't have like a close relationship. But, you know, I wish all good things for you. I wish that you go back to the spiritual world and everything like that. I don't feel any bad feeling towards you. But sometimes, you know, we just don't, some people just don't gel. It's okay. Even in the spiritual world, there are different camps. Right? Different camps. They don't all intermingle closely. They're like different camps. Like that. So it's even in the spiritual world, they're different personalities, different natures like that. But there's never disrespect. There's never aparad. All these things are not there.
So the difference is there, but there's no offense or mental.
That's right. Yeah. That's why Rupa Goswami says, be respectful. Right? In the mind, be respectful. Okay, if you don't get along with someone, that's okay, but don't think ill of them in the mind. Because Bhakti Tirtha Swami joined the temple in New York, I think it was. Was it New York? He joined. So Bhakti Tirtha Swami joined the temple. So he is black-skinned, Negro body. So his body is different. So we know in the history of America, there's a lot of racism. Right? So he joined the temple. Some of the white devotees, mostly white devotees, not treating him nicely. Right? So then, when Prabhupada came, he said to Prabhupada, he said, there's racism in your movement. And Prabhupada said, if you respond to them, then you are no better than them. Okay, they may feel like that towards you, but if you counteract, then that's the default. So people may feel one way towards us, but we should always be respectful back.
We use the pastime of but in that case, rather than him feeling even isn't that the devotee felt offended because the Prabhupada was laughing in the trance? So wouldn't be a ill feeling? A ill feeling is when somebody is deliberately hurt you or something.
Yeah, the devotee felt a little bit of pain because he thought Rupa Goswami was laughing at him. So that's how the pastime goes. Any other point?
The Pandavas only wanted the five villages so that they could do their duty, which is what we spoke of last night, which is to protect citizens.
Yeah, be chatrias.
Not because they wanted five villages.
Mm. Yep. Akrura said, O my dear son of Vichitravirya, O enhancer of the Kuru's glory, your brother Pandu, having passed away, your brother Pandu having passed away, you have now assumed the royal throne. So, in this material world, this is called politics. Politics means we act in a way where we want to position ourselves to be superior to another person. It's very common in this material world, right? And even in ISKCON, it's there. You know, in ISKCON, you know, we all want to climb the corporate ladder. You know, outside world, everyone's, you all know, because you work with the corporations, so everyone's trying to, you know, move up. And then in ISKCON, it's like that too. And actually, Bhakti Tirtha Swami said, not long before he left this world, he said, most of the leaders in ISKCON, if they did not have positions, they would not stay fixed in devotional service. What's that? He said, if they did not have positions, they would not stay fixed in devotional service. But, you know, because we're attached to position, that keeps us. Sometimes Krishna gives you some material position just to keep you in devotional service. Mm-hmm. Even one devotee, he was like a rock star about 20 years ago in America, like became quite popular in a particular music scene in America. And his guru told me, if he wasn't a rock star, he wouldn't chant his rounds and all these things. He needs to be a rock star. Right? So Krishna says, okay, be a rock star in my service. So we're like that. But when we become advanced in devotional service, it's not about the position, it's about just serving Krishna. And Prabhupada was like that. Even though Prabhupada had a high position, but it was about serving Krishna. It wasn't about his being the acharya. Just like one time Prabhupada was in the airport, and you know, all the devotees were sitting, like Prabhupada was sitting, and all the devotees were sitting on the ground. And then all the non-devotees, they couldn't sit in the lounge waiting to get on the plane because all the devotees take over everything. You know, Hare Krishna's always take over everything. Thinking, oh, we're taking everyone back to Godhead, so we just take over everything. So they're, you know, sitting everywhere. So one devotee stood up on the chair. He said, all the devotees, please leave this area. Right? And only one devotee stood up. Right? That was Prabhupada. Right? They said, someone made an announcement, all devotees leave this area. So Prabhupada stood up. Oh, we have to move. All the other devotees just, you know, we don't care. We're just sitting here. So Prabhupada was like that. He wasn't attached to his position. He was attached to doing service for Krishna. So we have to become like that eventually. You know, not we have to become attached to serving Krishna, not our position. Not that song.
Prabhupada would reference, you know, a lot just to his guru. Everything is by his guru's grace.
Yeah.
So he needs to see himself in a position except for a servant of his guru.
Yeah. Good.
So Prabhupada, the main devotees have got the same feeling. But the rock stars, why did they blame the ladies?
What are you talking about?
You said that ladies want the position, otherwise they won't turn their rounds.
No, I didn't say that. I said leaders. Leaders.
Okay.
Not ladies.
Okay.
I said the leaders need their position.
Okay,
the Bhagavatam says that women are full of material desires. We already know that. So, so we don't have any problem with that.
Okay.
It's the leaders we're worried about.
Okay.
Women, you can do whatever you want. So. Okay. By religiously protecting the earth, delighting your subjects with your noble character and treating all your relatives equally, you will surely achieve success and glory.
Yogi, you want to read that?
According to Shastra, that even though he had usurped the throne, if he now ruled according to the principles of Dharma and behaved properly, he could be successful.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is how to become successful, right? And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says in his commentary on this verse, he says, this verse teaches us how to attain perfection, how to become a perfect devotee or successful as a devotee. Prabhupada said one time, he said, don't try to be a great devotee, just be a good devotee. Just be a good devotee. My Guru Maharaj gave me that instruction a couple of times. He said, just be a good devotee. That's all we need to do. Just be a good devotee. Now, what is the definition of a good devotee? Right? There are many definitions, but this verse gives us a very very powerful instructions how we should act and behave. Right? So we should religiously protect the earth, delight our subjects with noble character, and treat all of our relatives equally, and surely you'll attain success and glory. The basic principle is that we should always be giving to others. That's the basic principle of being a devotee. Para dukkha dukkhi. Right? We're not worried about ourselves, our suffering. We're concerned with the suffering of everyone else. Right? All the living entities. And the other devotees. We should be always thinking of the welfare of the other Vaishnavas. That should be our priority. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is his appearance day in a few days. So three principles he gives in Bhaktisanta Saraswati Thakur said his whole mission can be summarized in three principles, which are there in the Chaitanya Bhagavat. What are those three principles? Namaruchi, Jivadoya, and Vaishnava Seva. Right? You have to serve devotees. Right? So you have to always be looking out the welfare of the devotees, certainly. What's the best way to serve a devotee? Engage prasanna. It's true, actually, because it means engaging them in Krishna's service. Right? That's how we serve other devotees. You engage them in Krishna's service. That's what it means to be a leader in ISKCON, because we're all leaders to some degree. To be a leader in ISKCON means we have to engage everyone in Krishna's service. That's what Prabhupada did for all of us, right? Right? Prabhupada came and he said, okay, I want all of you to do this. Right? Build the temple in Mayapur. Right? Develop Mayapur. Right? Develop Krishna Balaram Mandir. Develop Melbourne Mahaprabhu Mandir. Develop Hare Krishna Valley. Develop your Bhakti Vriksha programs. Whatever it is, whatever leadership position you have, but develop it. Right? So that's our seva, to bring others to Krishna. So Jiva Joya means to give to the living entities, to give them Krishna consciousness. Right? To bring them in contact with Krishna and with the devotees, to engage devotees in Krishna service. That's called Bhajana Kriya. Right? Bhaja Kriya means with force. You get some devotees, say, Prabhu, please come, do some service. Like that. A little bit of a nudge. Sometimes you have to nudge the devotees. Right? Sometimes you have to nudge them a lot. Now, serve. Right? My Guru Maharaj would do that to us. Right? Just look at us. Yeah? There's actually one video of him and Burujan Prabhu were giving class, 1993, in the temple there. They're sitting together in the evening. Giving class, and you see me, I'm sitting in the front, like right in front of Tamokas Maharaj. And he leans forward and he says something to me. He just goes, right with fire in his eyes, like, go, do this immediately. Leave something is upstairs, I had to go and get it or something. So I ran upstairs and put it back. But then as soon as I run off, you see he just kind of leans back with Burujumper and just starts smiling and everything, like that. But you know, when it comes to engaging someone in service, then Kriya means force. To get people moving in Krishna's service. Any point?
As leaders, we are sort of leaders because as soon as you identify yourself as a Hare Krishna, to the outside people, not devotees, you might just be a very unqualified devotee here compared to the others, like me. But when you're outside, you're representing the whole movement.
Yeah.
So what do you do in that case? Because you try to act well. I'll give you an example. The other day, I had to do an exit interview for someone who was leaving the business. And I said to her, you know, why are you leaving? And she said, actually, it's you. And I said, oh, really, why? What have I done? Please tell me, because it will help me improve. And she said, I just didn't like working with you because nobody can be that nice. And I said, I'm sorry, I've been called worse, but you know, like.
So you have to work on being less nice, that's right.
Maybe. So,
what's your point?
My point is, do you show your noble character in the temple and delight people, like it says?
No, it means
the
devotee.
Should you limit it outside? Prabhupada's, people who are not devotees?
Srila Prabhupada says his disciples should be seen as perfect ladies and gentlemen. So whenever someone meets us, they should have us in the highest regard. Right? And a lot of people do these days. They think, oh, the Hare Krishnas are very nice people. Their philosophy is crazy, and they dress crazy. They're very nice people. A lot of people think of us like that. A lot of the Australians, like I meet a lot of people down near our farm. They really like us. You know, but they think we're a little bit crazy what we think. Yeah.
And how you dress.
And how we dress. They think it's a bit crazy. But otherwise, very nice people. So Prabhupada said we should be perfect ladies and gentlemen. That's enough. Okay. This verse is very instructive. If you act otherwise, however, people will condemn you in this world, and in the next life you will enter the darkness of hell. Remain equally disposed, therefore, toward Pandu's sons and your own. So a Krura is a Sadhu. Sadhu means one who cuts. When we are instructing devotees, sometimes we have to cut through the false ego, through the maya. And Akrura, because a devotee genuinely cares about others. So when we genuinely care about others, we don't tell them what they want to hear, we tell them what they need to hear. So he's saying to Dhritarashtra, if you keep acting like this, you will go to hell. Guaranteed. So this is the instruction that he is giving. So a devotee will always be like that. A devotee will always speak frankly. So we have to learn the art of speaking frankly. We should be pleasing like that. We should speak very directly. That's actual friendship. That's actual compassion. So, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur points out, if we don't keep the right association, we become tamasic. And Prabhupada actually said one time, he said about the ISKCON temples, he said if the devotees in the temples simply worship the deities and don't preach, he said they will all sleep and smoke. Right? He actually said that. So if we just do deity worship and no preaching, right? He said, then we'll just sleep and we'll smoke ganja. In other words, you go into tamagul. So if we don't preach continuously, and if we don't follow the example and take the association of advanced devotees, we'll fall into tamagul. Right? We're products of our association. That's Rupa Goswami's entire teaching. Right? If you associate with devotees, you become a devotee. Yeah. If you associate with materialists, you become materialistic. Yeah. And then you'll become tamasic. So by associating with devotees, we become uplifted. That's the consciousness. Yeah. So it is being said here. Yeah. He's speaking very frankly to Dhritarashtra because he wants to help him. If you act like this, he doesn't just come in and say all nice words, oh, you know, Prabhu, you're so nice. You'll say, hey, you need to hear this. If you keep acting like this, if you keep treating the pandavas like this, you will go to hell. Understand it.
And the Guruji says the same thing to me.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, back in chapter 13.
Yeah.
Canto 1. Yeah, very good. Yep.
But what I understand is.
Yes.
Dhritarashtra did act otherwise, but he did not go to hell.
If you read the first canto, where he goes to the forest, he quits home, and then when he goes to the forest, and then he does tapasya, and then when he then it says he goes to the Brahma Jyoti. He didn't purify himself sufficiently. Right? He gets Brahman realization. He doesn't get Krishna consciousness.
He didn't make it to hell without tapasya.
In the Shastra it says that if you go to Brahma Jyoti, that is going to hell. For a devotee, that's going to hell. So,
especially if you had the association of Lord Krishna all the time and still you end up in Brahma Jyoti, nothing is very sad.
Yeah. Shishupal, same thing. Brahma Jyoti, you know, so much close association, but many of them made the mistake.
Dhritarashtra lost all his children, and that is like practically like in his culture.
Yeah.
When your sons, all your sons died, you are still alive, so.
Yeah. Yeah, because who killed all his sons? Bhima Singh killed all of them. Right? Killed them all, every one of them. The other Pandavas could have killed them, but they left them all for Bhima. Bhima took a vow, I'll kill all of you. He said that. He said, I'll kill you all. Understand this now. Right? So then, even though they could have killed them, they left them. They said, no, we'll leave you for Bhima. So Bhima killed all of them. And then at the end, when the battle was over and they came back to see Dhritarashtra, Bhima came before Dhritarashtra and Dhritarashtra was embracing all of the Pandavas, right, after the battle. And then when Bhima came, right, it was either Krishna or Yudhishthira, Krishna himself. Yeah, Duryodhana used to practice on a iron statue of Bhima Singh. He used to practice hitting the club by then. So just when he went to embrace him, he put the iron statue there, and then he got it and he crushed it, smashed it. And Krishna said, "Don't embrace him because he will kill you. He's so angry at you." Yeah. Yeah, Prabhupada said that when we preach, we become a little bit contaminated. Just like your example, right? So you're at school just because you're preaching and purifying the other kids. That's why you're there, right? More or less. Otherwise, you prefer homeschooling. You told me that. Right? Your parents won't do that, so you have to go to that school. So then you're at the school, and then you're preaching and purifying. Yeah, okay. But then you become a little bit contaminated. You know, they sing little songs, like, you know, "Wake me up." So then you become a little bit contaminated. So then Srila Prabhupada says that once a year we should go to Mayapur and we should bathe in the Ganges and we should purify ourselves of the contamination. So just say to your father, "Please take me to Mayapur once a year. And if he won't take you, then you can come with me, I'll take you." With his permission. Any other point? Okay. Which verse? 20. In this world, no one has any permanent relationship with anyone else. So now he speaks very directly and very powerful now. Like the next, say, 5-6 verses, Akrura's preaching is very, very powerful. So it brings everything into reality. What this material world is actually like. Very powerful instructions. And it's actually sobering because we're in the 10th canto now. 10th canto is the summum bonum. It is the Shraya. It's the final goal. It's Krishna's personal lila. Right? We've just heard all about Vrindavan. 2 chapters ago, we heard the deepest part of the entire Bhagavatam, right? The Brahmara Gita. Right? So these are very confidential subjects. But in order to realize all of this, we have to realize what Akrura is just about to speak. Because he's saying what Krishna says in Gita. You have to understand you're not the body, you are the soul. And until we understand that, we don't understand anything in the Bhagavatam. So these are very powerful instructions, this next section. In this world, no one has any permanent relationship with anyone else, O King. We cannot stay forever, even with our own body, what to speak of our wife, children, and the rest. Right? So it is natural to be attached to family members. That's natural. You can't give it up. Okay, so now you go to the Mahabharata, right? Arjuna's example. Arjuna was a pure devotee, isn't it? Right? An eternal associate of Krishna. How would you say it? No doubt. Paramahamsa, like pure devotee, Krishna's eternal associate. But when Abhimanyu was killed in that battle, right? No one could even look Arjuna in the eye. Right? He was so angry. So even for pure devotees, that kind of attachment is there. Right? They have attachment to their family. That's natural. So as devotees, not that we lose attachment to our family, it's unnatural to not love your wife or your husband or your children or your parent, that's fine, it's there. But for a devotee, we always temper it with philosophical understanding. We understand it's all temporary, right? And we are going to be separated, whether you like it or not. Just like John Lennon, you know John Lennon? John Lennon, you're not? Right? The Beatles. George Harrison, you know, right? So the other Beatle, John, if you look on Chat and Be Happy, there are two pictures of that, John and George. So he was speaking with Prabhupada, with Yoko Ono, his wife. So he said to Prabhupada, in our next life, we want to be together. And Prabhupada said, "You don't understand the philosophy." What's the goal? We just take birth again, and then you become the husband, she becomes the wife, and, you know. Just imagine it. We all stay together like, you know. That's not the goal, right? The goal is to realize Krishna. That's the goal. So, you know, we're attached. That's okay. But that is when we understand philosophically, we will be separated. So we don't let the attachment overwhelm us. That's the point. It doesn't become the end-all be-all of our existence. The end-all be-all of our existence is service to Guru and Krishna. That is more important. Right? I'm very attached to my wife. Right? So you're here and you're a nice devotee and I'm very attached to you. But who am I more attached to? Tamal Krishna Maharaj or Atulya? Maharaj, right? More attached. Only a little bit, but... But no, I am. I'm more attached to Maharaj. I'm more attached to Prabhupada. More attached to Krishna. Right? Because we see the family members as Krishna's devotees. That's how we see them. So in that respect, we're attached to them. Right? But who are we more attached to? Guru and Krishna. Like that. So all of us are like that. It's always the same. Right? She's attached to me. Right? But she's more attached to her Guru Maharaj. Right? And that's not wrong. I don't feel like, oh, no, that's wrong or that's incorrect. No, I feel that actually that's the way I would like it. Because at the time of death, who will save you? Right? Guru and Krishna. That's who saves you. Right? So we have to become attached. So that's the point. So as devotees, we keep things balanced. The materialists, they don't keep things balanced.
So probably when we die,
yes.
Will we see our Guru there?
He'll be waiting for you.
Yes?
Yeah, he'll take you to Krishna.
Okay.
Chaitanya Swami will come and take you to Krishna.
Jai.
Jai. Means he is everywhere, right?
He's wherever Krishna wants him to be.
Okay.
That's the point.
But I might die before him. What will happen then?
Krishna will reconcile it. Or the other way that you can look at it, Prabhupada will come and get you.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Jaipataka Swami comes, then he will introduce you.
That's good.
Yeah. So, nothing to worry about.
Thank you.
Well, good.
Thank you, Prabhupada.
You're welcome.
In the Buddhist culture, husband is considered the guru for the wife.
Please speak. Keep going. And?
Maybe you can comment on this aspect.
If the husband has the adhika, he has to have the adhika. The guru has the qualification. So therefore, we respect him as guru because he is guru, he acts as guru. If the husband is acting as guru and has the adhikara or the qualification, then yes, the wife should see him like that. Right? Just like just let me think for a minute. It's a Prabhupada or Gorbachev's Prabhupada Maharaj. I think it was Prabhupada. Either Prabhupada or Gorbachev's Prabhupada Maharaj. I'm just trying to think. I think it was Prabhupada. So then one husband. Well, I think one of Prabhupada's one husband, he said, should my wife offer obeisances to me in the morning? Because I am the husband, the guru, like that. And... Yeah, I know he said that. But I think Prabhupada, there's also a comment by Prabhupada as well. And Prabhupada's indication was, you know, like... You think you are that elevated? If you are that elevated, fine, no problem. Like you see, like Burajan Prabhu. So okay, he's qualified. So I've seen Jagatarini Manaji offer obeisances to him because she sees him like that. He's my husband, but he's my guru, Shiksha Guru, like that. So we should see like that. Then you have to be qualified. That's it. Anything else?
In Indian culture, on special occasions, the wives do offer obeisances to them. Like if there's a festival or some special occasion, then
we do offer the business. Yeah, it's a very special occasion. Quite often. I thought it was once in a day of Brahma.
Especially in Tamil culture, from where my husband comes.
Really? I should live in that part of India. So, which verse are we on?
I meant it.
Find out which part of India it is, we'll go and live in there. We'll go and join that village. Okay. Every creature is born alone and dies alone. And alone one experiences the just rewards of his good and evil deeds. These are very powerful instructions. I was studying this morning when preparing the class. Very powerful. It has a profound effect on me. Very powerful instructions. Right? So, Prabhupada says in the first canto, I think it is, pretty sure it's fair, in one purport, Prabhupada said we must learn to fly our own plane.
Yeah.
Right? Only one person is taking you back to Godhead, and that's you. Right? We're the pilot. Right? We're the pilot, we're flying the plane. The guru is on the ground in the control tower. So he's on the radio, and he's saying, do this, do that, go down, go up, like this. Like he's giving you the instructions. You fly the plane. Every one of us flies the plane. So for us to get back to Godhead, there's only one person that you can... only one person takes the responsibility, and that's ourselves. Right? There's no one else. Right? The guru gives you all the instruction to get back to Godhead. But whether or not you go back to Godhead, that's your choice. Yeah? Otherwise, you might crush the plane. And if you crash the plane, you take birth again and then get another plane until you learn to fly and get back to the destination. So we're born alone, we die alone, that's it.
I think the issue is that when you want to find a person that she was alone, she said that she had to fly
alone. When they walked to the mountain? To the mountains?
The Pandavas left Draupadi behind and started walking when they heard the news of Krishna's departure. They did not even wait for Draupadi.
Yeah, but she followed. But
then she followed and then the purport Prabhupada, right?
That yeah, even at that time. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Good point. Okay. In the guise of dear dependents, strangers steal the sinfully acquired wealth of a foolish man. Just as the offspring of a fish drink up the water that sustains the fish. Yeah. So, as devotees, the family members can be very favorable to going back to Godhead. The wife is not an impediment. The husband is not an impediment. The children are not impediments. If they're devotees, actually they are companions on the trip back home to Godhead, on the journey back home. So they're not impediments, right? But if they're not devotees, right, they can become great impediments. You know King Kulashekha? He wrote the Mukunda Mala Sutra. Right? So very famous. Prabhupada used to quote, and Prabhupada was actually commenting on that. He didn't finish his commentary, but he was writing. So King Kulashekha says, the material world is like an ocean. Right? We're in an ocean of material existence, suffering. And he says, when we're in the ocean, he said, the big waves come, and the winds. And he said, the winds are lust, anger, greed, pride, envy, illusion, the big winds, which blow the waves of the three modes of material nature. And while the waves are crashing on us, right, and all these problems are coming, he said, then from underneath come crocodiles and sharks, right, and they begin to bite you. So we're suffering enough in this material world. And he says, the crocodiles and sharks are your family members, right, if they're not devotees, right? Then they come under and they getting you. And then he says, you know, you're being smashed by the waves and the sharks and the crocodiles are biting. And then suddenly there's a whirlpool which begins to drag you in. And he said, that is the wife. Or for the woman, the husband. Yeah? Which means if they're not devotees. It means attachment to the opposite sex just sucks us down into the whirlpool of material existence. So here, same thing that a crew is saying, be very careful about a materialistic association.
I don't understand the example of the fish.
Because it means like the fish has children.
Yeah.
So it, you have a little, like a fish tank.
Yeah.
Right? And in the fish tank you have some fish and the fish has children.
Yeah.
But then the fish are thirsty, so they begin to drink all the water.
Yeah.
So then you know, you're giving a home for your children, but they're just taking everything. And then suddenly you have nothing left. And then you're drowning, they're drowning. They take all your facility. In other words, your family, it says this in the 11th canto also, the relatives, they just take everything. And earlier in the Bhagavatam it says the family members are like jackals and tigers and they just suck your blood. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. You just work hard and you just pay all the bills and they take everything. And they don't give you any gratitude for anything. So enjoy family life.
Sometimes the family members also help. For example, for most of us, our parents would have helped us to come to this level to be able to join Krishna consciousness.
Yeah.
Naturally, the association of devotees and other things are also there.
Yeah.
How do we see that? Do we still see them as shark and crocodiles?
No. No, because they're not. They're not shark. I mean, that's speaking about relatives who are impious. Many of the families, especially Indian families, the relatives are pious. They may not be devotees, but they're pious. So they gave you many things, and they give you so many things. And even now, they give you so much support and like that. So we should always be very respectful to them. And try to make them into devotees. I see so many of the Indian devotees, their parents are becoming devotees, and family members and all like that. Just keep trying. Eventually they'll surrender. Which one is it? 33. A fool indulges in sin to maintain his life, wealth and children and other relatives, for he thinks, these things are mine. In the end, however, these very things all abandon him, leaving him frustrated. So basically he's predicting what's going to happen to Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra, if you keep mistreating the Pandavas, your own family members, they're going to be destroyed. Right? And you'll have nothing at the end. Right? Don't follow this path. Abandoned by his so-called dependents, ignorant of the actual goal of life, indifferent to his real duty, and having failed to fulfill his purposes, the foolish soul enters the blindness of hell, taking his sinful reactions with him. So there are only two choices in this world. Right? Surrender to Krishna or suffer in the material energy. They're the only two choices we have. Right? And everyone has a choice. Because it's interesting. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur asks questions in his purports that we would ask. Right? So why doesn't he surrender to Krishna? He actually says in the next few verses, Dhritarashtra himself says, he knows that Krishna is God. Why doesn't he surrender? Right? And the answer is because the soul has independence. Krishna never forces any of us to surrender. It's up to us. Even the example there is that Lord Chaitanya took that servant with him when he was traveling through South India. Which one was it? Kala Krishna Das, right? And even when he was with Lord Chaitanya, right, he saw some gypsies, some women, right? And then at night time, he thought Lord Chaitanya was resting, he took off and went to see the women. And then came back late, and Lord Chaitanya had to go and save him, grab him and pull him back. Hey, what are you doing? God had to go and get him, which is basically what's happening in this material world. Prabhupada says in Nectar of Instruction, in the purport, Prabhupada says, Krishna will forcibly drag us back to Godhead. Right? If we don't fully surrender ourselves, then Krishna will grab us and forcibly pull us the rest of the way. But don't rely on that. Because he might say, no, you can stay another time. Right, so just be careful. Don't take advantage of Krishna. Okay. But that's the basic point which is being made here. We have a choice. Krishna is not going to force us to surrender. Right? We have to choose to give our independence to him. There's one very powerful class in 1994, I think it was, in Mayapur, during the GBC meeting. So each day a different guru speaks. You know, if you go to Mayapur, they're a different guru. So Bhakti Tirtha Swami was speaking, giving a class, a very famous class. And I don't know if it's on video or not, but and Maharaj is sitting on, he's sitting on the Vyasasan. The whole Vyasasan was moving. The whole Vyasasan was moving. He was sitting on it. He was saying, and Radha Madhava were right there. And he was saying, I give my independence to you. I give my independence to you. He said it three times, like shouting, I give my independence to you. And the whole Vyasasan was moving while he was doing it. And all the devotees were like, you know. And at the end of the class, everyone just started clapping. Because he was making the point, we have to get, it's up to us. And that's what sannyas means. Sannyas means body, mind, words in the service of Krishna, right? And every one of us has to become a sannyasi, right? Not physically or externally, but internally, we have to give body, mind, and words to Krishna. So here, Dhritarashtra is choosing not to. So what does he get at the end of his life? Krishna says, okay, fine, into my Brahma Jyoti, but no service, right? Because he won't surrender, so he's okay. You don't get me. Okay. So he misused his independence. Okay. So not very intelligent.
So how do you give your independence?
Everything we do, all day. Everything we do. Right? Mataji's are making flowers. Right? Some Mataji are making kiwiks.
Everything
for Krishna. What are we doing now? Shravanam, kirtanam. Right? Archanam, all these, this is nine ways to serve Krishna. So that's giving your independence to Krishna.
Thank you, Prabhupada.
You're welcome, Mataji. Okay. Which one?
Five.
Therefore, O King, looking upon this world as a dream, a magician's illusion, or a flight of fancy, please control your mind with intelligence and become equipoised and peaceful, my Lord. So this was there in the first canto. The first canto says, and the second canto say, this world is a dream. Right? It is a dream. So if it's a dream, why do we take it so seriously? Seriously. It's a serious thing. You have to contemplate this. At some point in time, we have to contemplate it. Why do we take it so seriously if it's just a dream? Why do we get so upset about such small things if it's just a dream? We have to carefully consider these points. You know, all of us do it. We all get so upset about such insignificant things. And it's not that big a deal, right? If you look at it in correct perspective, right, it's not a big deal, this whole world. When you find out you're about to die, when you find out you have cancer or a disease or whatever it is everything else important? Right? Because like one of my friends told me today, he said, I have cancer, right? So is everything else important? All the little things? No, no longer important. So we should, if we have realization, we should live like this every day. What is actually important, and focus on that. Dhritarashtra said, O Master of Charity. Now, interesting, because in this verse, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, Dhritarashtra is being preached to by Akrura, but he's proud. So listen to the way he's speaking. He's speaking as a proud person speaks. Right? He says, O Master of Charity, I can never be satiated while hearing your auspicious words. Indeed, I am like a mortal who has attained the nectar of the gods. But he's being sarcastic. This is just flattery. Oh, you're such a great devotee, such a great personality, you're giving me such great instructions. But he's not taking it on board. Just being proud. But actually, if we listen to these words properly, as he says these words are amrita. What does this word amrita mean?
Nectar.
We always say nectar. Amrita means nectar. But actually, if you break the Sanskrit down, what does it actually mean?
Makes you immortal.
Yeah, immortal or mrita, mrityu. Mrita means death. Amrita means without death.
Immortal.
So it means immortal. Means without death. When you hear the words of the Bhagavatam, it is amrita. It means it makes you deathless. It makes you immortal. That's why we hear the Bhagavatam. And if we meditate on these instructions very deeply, okay, Dhritarashtra is not listening, but we should be listening. Akrura is very kindly instructing all of us. So if we hear his instructions, we'll become immortal. No fear of death. Even so, gentle Akrura, because my unsteady heart is prejudiced by affection for my sons, these pleasing words of yours cannot remain fixed there, just as lightning cannot remain fixed in a cloud. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that excessive material attachment destroys knowledge or jnana. When you become too attached to this material world, right, and there's so many different types of attachments, and we all have so many different types of attachments, it destroys transcendental knowledge. That's why, as devotees, we gradually have to become more and more detached. That's what Grihastha Ashram is for. Right? I remember my Guru Maharaj gave a class, I think it was 1991, up at New Gokul, that farm outside of Sydney. And he said that the whole point of Grihastha Ashram is to become detached. Right? Why do we go into Grihastha Ashram? Because we're attached. But he was pointing out in the class, he said, as you go through it, year after year after year, you should feel yourself becoming more and more detached, gradually. Right? Sannyasis don't have to go through Grihastha Ashram. Brahmacharis don't have to go through Grihastha Ashram. Like, you know, Janani Gospel in Mayapur, right? Being Brahmachari for 50 years. Doesn't have to go through Grihastha Ashram. Because the realization is there. But for us, we have to go through it. But the whole point of going through it is to develop detachment. You don't want to be like Ajamil. Right? How old was Ajamil?
80.
Huh? How old was he?
80.
80 something, wasn't it? 86 or something. I mean, he's old. Right? He's still having kids. You don't want to be like that. You don't want to be 80 and still having kids and still materially attached. Should be becoming detached. But it's not as easy as it sounds, that's the point. I remember when I got married the first time, right? They made like a documentary and they interviewed myself. And I was 28, 29 at the time. And they were speaking about marriage and so forth. And they did the interview. And I said, at the age of 50, we take sannyas. We just get married for 20, 25 years, and at the end we just did that. Now I'm 48. And it's a different game. It's a different story, because now I'm realizing that's not going to happen. Right? I'm going to be married till, you know, the day I die. Right? And I'm comfortable with that. Right? But, you know, when I was a young devotee, I thought, yeah, I'll be a sannyasi. No problem. 50, no problem. Now I'm almost 50 and it's not happening. So it's a gradual process, but we should be feeling that we're becoming more detached as time goes by. Right? And you have to, and only you can be the judge of that. Mm-hmm. You have to see as your life goes by, are you becoming more detached? If you're not, then you're missing the whole point.
But there's a general rule now that in Kali Yuga, one should not become sannyasi.
Yeah, the Vedas say that. The Vedas say that. It's a rare thing. See, it can become sannyas, but you have to be very qualified. I mean, you know, who becomes sannyas? Like in our movement, if you look in the last few years, you know, like Bhakti Rasamrita Swami. Right. So he's not ordinary, is he?
Yeah.
Well, he's not ordinary. You know, he's a sannyasi the day he walked into the temple. First day he was a bhakti, he was a sannyasi. I mean, but that's not like, who's like that? That's like one in 10,000 are like that. It's very rare. Who can defy the injunctions of the Supreme Lord who has now descended in the Yadu dynasty to diminish the earth's burden? So he himself is saying, who can defy Krishna's law? But what's the irony? He's not following Krishna's law. So every living entity has a choice. You can follow Krishna or defy Krishna. I offer my obeisances to him, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who creates this universe by the inconceivable activity of his material energy and then distributes the various modes of nature by entering within the creation. From him, the meaning of whose pastimes is unfathomable, come both the entangling cycle of birth and death and the process of deliverance from it. Sukadeva Goswami said, having thus apprised himself of the king's attitude, Akrura, the descendant of Yadu, took permission from his well-wishing relatives and friends and returned to the capital of the Yadavas. Akrura reported to Balaram and Lord Krishna how Dhritarashtra was behaving toward the Pandavas. Thus, O descendant of the Kurus, he fulfilled the purpose for which he had been sent. So in the beginning of the chapter, Krishna said, go and find out what's happening in Hastinapur. He comes back. He said, the Pandavas are being mistreated. So now we see, this is where the Mahabharata, Krishna gets involved in the Pandavas' life, in the Mahabharata, and then in the Bhagavatam, he becomes very involved in their life to protect them. Because Krishna says, declare it boldly, Arjuna. My devotee will never perish. Like that. Srila Prabhupada ki.